Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Now to the story on the front pages of most of the English papers this morning. The BBC has said it has been in touch with police following claims that one of its presenters paid a teenager €40,000 for sexually explicit photographs. The presenter hasn't been named but has been suspended, and the BBC says it's working as quickly as possible to establish the facts. The Sun newspaper first reported the allegations on Friday. It is claimed the presenter began paying the young person when they were 17 years old, and the BBC has been in contact with the police, but no formal allegation has yet been made to them. In a moment, we'll speak to Andrea Martin, media lawyer, but first, Scott Bryan is a TV critic and broadcaster in England, and he joins us now. Good morning to you, Scott.
Good morning.
So, today, there's some serious questions facing the BBC as details of this controversy continue to unfold.
Yes, you are right. I mean, it all comes down to who knew what and when. In a statement yesterday, the BBC said that it became aware of a complaint in May and that new allegations had been put forward last week, and that when the initial complaint was made in May, the BBC began looking into it, and that they received different allegations on Thursday. I think it sort of raises questions about what those initial complaints were, and why was it that the presenter involved was only formally suspended yesterday? Essentially, why was there a 6-week gap that they were allowed to continue presenting? And it's also many questions in regards to whether the investigation that was launched at the time was thorough, what conclusion it came up with, and the appropriate next steps now. Now, of course, there would be, in a very sort of key case and very concerning case such as this, that there would be elements that the public would not be aware of at the time being. I think that as the week goes on, we will become more aware of the facts generally, but I think there are questions that are being raised about the BBC's process and also about the implications, because of course this is a very serious story. And the consequences of it are big.
And as you say, the BBC says, and it's worth repeating this, it's working as quickly as possible to establish the facts in order to properly inform appropriate next steps. But there are MPs who are concerned too about that investigation and what's happening and whether enough action is being taken.
Yes, the Culture Secretary yesterday met with the BBC because of these concerns, Lucy Fraser. But she then issued a statement that the BBC should be sort of given some space to continue with their inquiries, essentially for the time being, seeming that she is comfortable with how the BBC are processing it, at least for now. I think it will become more clear over the course of the next week about how the BBC conducted in regards to how they approached these allegations when they were first approached in May, and also in regards to the different allegations and what they specifically were on Thursday. But as you would expect, with the BBC being a organisation, a broadcaster that's paid by the licence fee, it has accountability to the public. And I think it also comes down to a matter of trust. I mean, it's the fact that the people who we listen to, the people who we watch on TV each day, even if we don't know them individually, we of course feel that they are sort of a person within our own lives. So we would want to ensure that the right action has been taken appropriately in regards to allegations that are being made. And I think it is always just the case with these sort of scenarios. It's not just the individual act and the allegations, but equally as important, I think the public feel, is the response. Is it adequate? Is it sufficient? And is it timely? As in, has it been conducted with all the right processes and procedures? And I think on that is what we are still waiting for the time being.
Okay, and I'll talk to you a bit more about the public reaction in a moment, but the BBC's annual report is due to be published tomorrow, Scott, but that is going to be completely overshadowed by this, isn't it?
It is, yeah. So the BBC annual report is normally the opportunity for the BBC to highlight its big successes. You have also an indication about the amount that its top paid presenters have been paid over the course of the last year, so that already creates quite a lot of headlines for itself. But it's also for the BBC in a very changing media environment for them to highlight their successes. However, in a matter of poor timing, it is also one of the only opportunities for the BBC in which journalists are able to really ask top BBC management, including the Director General, Tim Davey, whatever is on their mind. So, of course, with this story now dominating the headlines, you would expect a lot of questions to be asked tomorrow in regards to that. And then, of course, you know, the other concern has been around other presenters who have not had, you know, who have nothing to do with this, sort of feeling a bit like they've been hung out to dry. There's, of course, defamation and privacy laws, which has meant that the presenter involved in regards to these allegations have not been named. But other presenters such as Nikki Campbell, Rylan Clark, Jeremy Vine and Gary Lineker have all had to issue statements on Twitter to say that they have nothing to do with this. One presenter even reporting a Twitter account to the police because the individual had made allegations that they say are not true. So I think there is a concern within the BBC about whether presenters are being kind of looked after carefully. There is, of course, a duty of care to other individuals too. And that, of course, is causing a further headache for the BBC.
Mm-hmm. It's a very difficult one to square away, though, because they're not in a position to identify the person at the centre of this, which means that people are free then on social media to point the finger at everybody else. And we witnessed that in a fairly surreal weekend on social media in relation to all of this. Andrea Martin is a media lawyer, and Andrea joins us now as well. Thank you very much for taking our call. And a lot of people will have seen this over the weekend, as Scott explained, all of these BBC presenters and journalists who had to post statements. They felt they had to post statements saying, this is not me, because there was so much speculation around. And to put it bluntly, defamation flying around as well, Andrea.
Absolutely. And I think this is a very, very timely reminder that defamation occurs, and you can be sued for defamation equally for what you post online as the newspapers and newspapers, radio and television stations can be sued for what they say. And I know that one person actually took down his allegation and his tweet and said that about somebody else, and said, I only drink at the weekend, I'm retired, I've tried to paint a sorry picture of himself. And like most normal people, I tweet freely. No, it's not okay. It is defamatory. It is absolutely no excuse to say I was drunk. It's no excuse to say I didn't mean it. Once you put somebody's name out there, and if it's not, if you can't prove it to be true, it is defamatory, particularly with an allegation of this seriousness.
Mm-hmm. Do you think there's a misunderstanding in general here in Ireland as well about how serious it can be to throw names around on social media in this way?
I think this is a persistent problem. And the thing is that it is equally unlawful, whether it takes place online or on a TV or radio station, because of the practicalities of tracking down the people who actually post tweets. And it's a hugely expensive and tedious affair. They often get away with it. Now, there are reforms of the law that came into effect in 2013 in the UK, and there are similar proposals here in Ireland for reform of the law so that social media platforms such as Twitter would be obliged to, that you could notify them and that they would be obliged to provide information. It's a slightly different procedure would be utilised here in Ireland, but that there are procedures for a court order that would release information about who was the owner of an account or their IP address, any information that the social media company had about them. So I think people are going to be in for a shock if this becomes law in Ireland, because their names and addresses, their IP addresses, will be made available to individuals who, or can be made available to individuals who believe they've been mm-hmm. defamed.
I just see Sky running the line that Nikki Campbell, the BBC presenter, has said it was a very distressing weekend for him. Now, let's just look at the UK law, and someone like Nikki Campbell or the other people who were wrongly accused of being the presenter involved in this instance, Andrea, with the law currently as it is, if they can identify the person who defamed them, if they're successful in bringing that person to court, how much do you think that they might get in damages from a case like that?
Well, there is some precedent for this in the UK. A number of years ago, both the BBC and ITV broadcast a programme, broadcast information about a Tory peer, a Conservative peer, member of the House of Lords, who has since actually passed away. But he was accused of sex abuse, not by name, but enough identifying information was given about him, and it wasn't him at all. And somebody tweeted about this as well, and a number of journalists repeated that tweet. And in his settlement, he got £185,000 against the BBC and ITV, and he also got an award again. He also got a very significant settlement from the person who tweeted. He also pursued two journalists. He also retweeted it, and he also set up a procedure. He said he was going to sue absolutely everybody who tweeted about it. He then said anybody who had under 500 followers and who paid £25 to a particular charity that he nominated, he would drop his case against them. So it is serious, and it was a six-figure sum.
Yeah, we're also seeing a change, aren't we, in how people who feel they've been defamed are treating this, because a lot of the people at the weekend who were in this dreadful position having to defend themselves against baseless allegations were saying that they were going to either make a criminal complaint about it or take legal advice. Now, that has shifted, because there was a period of time where people would go, oh, well, it's social media and it happens and we all move on. Do you sense that there is a real shift there?
Well, there is since 2020 in Ireland. We do have an act whereby it was an amendment of our harassment legislation, whereby tweeting something that or whatever social media it's used, but making a post online that is grossly offensive is a crime. I must say, for many years, I thought this was an undue restriction of freedom of speech. But watching how social media has evolved over years and the damage that can be done, I must say I changed my position on it. There is similar legislation now. Interestingly, in the UK, there is the Communications Act 2003, rather. And it has a specific provision that says it's an offence to send by a public electronic communications network a message that a person knows to be false. Once somebody has come out and said it was not me, anybody who repeats it is exposing themselves to liability under Section 127, and a complaint can be made to the police. A complaint can be made to the police for a grossly offensive posting as well. And that has been used quite controversially in the UK. So there is, in both Ireland and the UK, a potential for being prosecuted for making grossly offensive statements.
Mm-hmm. And just can you just outline the differences when it comes to defamation and social media and legal responsibility that apply here in Ireland, the difference between here and the UK?
In the UK, there's what's called the serious harm test. And it raises the bar for what the claimant, the plaintiff, need, how much harm they need to have suffered. So if it's minor, they probably can't bring a defamation action. And the same proposal is included in defamation law reform proposals here that are on the desk of Minister McEntee at the moment. And the sooner those changes are brought in, I think, the better in Ireland. There are a number of changes proposed. So our law is going to be brought into line much more with UK law. There will also be a provision for the making of orders against social media companies quickly and cheaply, so that that people who have been defamed can find out who it is who posted the defamatory posting about them. And that will bring us into line with what happens under UK law since 2013 as well.
Andrea, thank you very much. Scott, can I just come back to you just to finish? Are you expecting to hear, have the BBC said that they're going to say anything more publicly about this today?
So far, no. I mean, I feel that this will be something that we'll be getting a lot of clarity on. I mean, I think the fact that, as I said earlier, there is the BBC annual report tomorrow, which will be a time in which top BBC management will be speaking to journalists quite publicly. I think that'll be an indication about where we are up to. But as we have seen, this is a very fast-moving story. But of course, it's one that has been driven by reports from The Sun. So I guess it's also the case down to what other newspapers are reporting on and how the BBC responds to that.
Scott, thank you. Scott Brine, TV critic and broadcaster. And earlier we heard Andrea Martin, who's a media lawyer. Coming up next, the woman whose life changed when she took over the family farm.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.